The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Before we get into the episode, however, the station's having an episode.
Yes, we are. The AM tower is going through maintenance, but everyone who's listening, you can still find us on 96.5 FM or KCNR1460.com.
And there you have it.
Thanks.
Alex. Yeah. All righty. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
And we have two guests for you today, actually. Two interesting things that are not about the shutdown. What a nice break, huh? What a nice break. But let's see. Today is October 5th, and we are still voting no on Prop 50 if you live in California. And if you're confused about what Prop 50 is or you think it doesn't matter if you vote, please change your mind. I could send you to ShastaGOP.com, and you could see the maps and what your representation will look like, especially if you live in Northern California or any of the rural areas. They're basically planning to wipe out our representation and do that by violating the state constitution. They're trying to trick voters into helping them. So don't do that. Just say no on Prop 50.
Well, I like the representatives down in Southern California.
I want to be represented by Huffman over in Marin County.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to know what it's like to have an atheist for a congressman. Well. That would be terrific. And I'm not actually making that up. So, our guest for this part of the hour is Ann Vandersteel. Easy to say, except for me. Darn it. Co-founder of the American Made Foundation. She's the host of Steel Truth and is considered a thought leader and a trailblazer in new media. As the former president and co-host of Your Voice America, she's a popular conservative new media news and analysis show, and built her reputation as a trusted news source who respects the responsibility of delivering accurate news. What a great idea. And analysis with consistency.
Hmm.
And wow. Sounds like our kind of woman. So the documentary is Taken, State-Sanctioned Kidnapping. And we've titled the show based on her publicist information she sent to us, Parents Jailed for Kidnapping After Refusing Vaccines. What could go wrong, right?
Yeah.
So, Anne, not big fans of the forced vaccine thing here, so you are... You are kind of speaking to the choir, but, of course, there are other people listening, so please let them have it. I know we only have you for a short period of time.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much, and good afternoon. You know, this is such an atrocious story, but we're making headway. And when you have to reach a point where parents in America are fighting just to be parents, you have to stop and ask yourself, wait a minute, has the government gone just a little too far? And frankly, this case that we featured in our documentary, Taken, State-Sanctioned Kidnapping, is about the Rivera family, beautiful family, seven folks, two parents, five children, and their youngest at the age of 9 months old back in February. They didn't want to vaccinate their child with it's not even a vaccine. They didn't want to give their nine-month-old a vitamin K shot. And a pediatrician who was born and educated in Tehran, Iran, saw it differently, and as a mandated reporter in the communist state of Massachusetts, the People's Republic of Massachusetts, he took it upon himself to call the State Department of Children and Families, report this horrific incident of denying their nine-month-old a vitamin K shot based on their religious rights as parents, and that is what sent an absolute, you know, spiraling out of control episode of constant harassment by DCF, law enforcement in the state, in Fitchburg, Massachusetts, whereby the family decided to move to Texas. And they were then pursued there, arrested when a warrant was issued over this, and brought extradited back to Massachusetts after doing a month in jail in Texas for
$2.5 million.
Yeah, they put both parents in prison for $2.5 million on bail each, and then extradited them back to Massachusetts. And guess what? It was found in court. This is going to just blow your mind. It was found in court 10 days ago that the mother, because they're trying them separately with different criminal charges, that the mother was not guilty of familial kidnapping, yet she still has not been given the children back, and nor did the judge at the time tell the DA to go ahead and indict DCF for wrongful kidnapping of their children. So this is the world in which we're living, and, you know, I sit here in Florida, and listen, it's no bed of roses anywhere. DCF, DPS, whatever you want to call it around the country, they're all getting federal money, and it's coming straight out of our tax dollars. That, you know, Child Protective Services and American Children and Families is a Social Security administrated Title IV-E funded program across all 50 states. So let's face it, we're still funding our gallows no matter how you slice it, and the destruction of the American families marches on to the beat of their own psychotic drum. And it's actually terrorizing. They're terrorizing parents and destroying families along the way.
Is there anything the federal government can do about that?
Well, I'm so glad you asked, because what we're trying to do right now with American Made Action, our 501c4, is we've got our attorneys in the process right now of drawing up several lawsuits. We're looking at a couple of state lawsuits, one for each parent, and federal, because there is federal money that is tied into this. This state did cross state lines from Massachusetts to Texas. So you've got two different states engaged in the process, in wrongful kidnapping of the children. I imagine Texas will be none too happy when they learn that there wasn't a legal warrant justifying the arrest of the parents and the removal of the children. I'm sure Ken Paxton is going to have a sense of humor failure, or at least he should. This is, you know, he's running for Senate now, so he has a lot to ride here. But we've lawyered up, we're suing, we've put documentaries out, we've written a book about this, and we're educating the public as much as possible. Our foundation is paying to get this information out, because parents need to stand up, fight back, and we got to defund the agency that's creating this problem.
And when did this happen? Or when did this start?
This started back in February, when they really just started harassing the family. I did a social media post recently. It's about a 4-minute clip where they were in court 10 days ago with Ruth Encarnacion, the mother, and the CPS attorney went through date by date with the chief investigator, Ms. Guardado and Gerardo, and she agreed. She openly admitted that on about 11 different instances in less than 3 weeks' time, she was banging on the door and calling them, but never properly notified them on anything. And frankly, there is no law that says you must give your child a vitamin K shot. So this was really fabricated.
Vitamin K, what does it even do? Like, what?
You know,
I don't mean to be a dope, but I mean, do we get a vitamin K shot? I don't think any of us ever
did. Listen, I take vitamin D plus K because, you know, they're now blocking the sun on a regular basis, at least down here in Florida. It's insane what's going on with the weather and the spring and the skies, and our weather is completely a mess down here. But I don't want to go off on that tangent. What I'm telling you is vitamin K and vitamin D are really important for your bone health, your immune health.
Sure.
But there is, you know, let's just look at this. When you're born, unless you're born to a child, you know, a mother of a drug addiction problem, you know, you're born a healthy baby. This is what the whole vaccine industry is out of control. I mean, HIV shot that they want to give your child, right? This is something that's a sexually transmitted disease. Are you telling me that your child is having sex the minute it exits the womb, that you need to prevent some sort of sexually transmitted disease? This is just big pharma running amok, and I do say this much because I'm grateful for the great state of Florida in so many ways. We actually have a Surgeon General that gets it, and we've drawn that line in the sand, and we're not allowing the bureaucrats, unelected medical boards, or any non-governmental agency to have the final say when it comes to our child's health and well-being. And our own Surgeon General last month became the first state in the nation to move forward towards ending all childhood vaccine mandates. And this is Dr. Joe Latipo. He's fantastic. He's the one who was calling out the COVID shots back in, you know, back when.
Yeah.
So we have
like you can't go to public school. This was a baby.
This is a baby. A baby. Like, I mean, you know, and the pediatrician, here's the grossest part. You're going to be blown away at this one. Forget the fact they kidnapped the kids, but the pediatrician agreed that the 9-month-old was healthy. It was a great well-being visit. Yet, because he couldn't sell a vitamin K shot and get his paycheck for Big Pharma, he decided to use his mandated reporting authority and contact DCF, fill out a form, and now look at what's happened. The family has been absolutely destroyed, and now they're trying to pick up the pieces and put this family back together.
How many other kids do they have?
They have 5 in total. Oh, and they're all crying. They want to go home. They don't understand whether or not with mom and dad. They don't understand any of this. 10 and younger.
Wow.
10 years old and younger.
And they snatched all the kids.
All of them.
Because the baby couldn't get her, because the baby didn't get a vitamin K shot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I know. This is the world in which we live. Hello. So, anybody see anything wrong with this?
No kidding. And then, okay, so go back to the part about how they went to Texas. So,
right. So the family got tired of the harassment. They were hiding in their home, and the police were banging on the door. DCF was banging on the door, and he had politely told them he'd sent a letter saying, you know, we respectfully decline when we're exercising our religious freedom to not give our child the vitamin K shot. I mean, they did this all lawfully. The family was lawful. There was no outstanding issues. There's no abuse. There's no drug problems. No, they didn't pay their taxes. It's nothing like that. It was literally a mandated pediatrician who started this ball rolling. And if you know anything about the system, these organizations, DCF, create a whole host because of that rich Title IV-E funding coming from the federal government. It creates a bunch of parasitic other organizations from, whether it's guardian ad litem, whether it is counselors, whether it's other pediatricians, other lawyers, you know, state-sponsored attorneys for DCF. It's a huge industry. It's an $80 billion a year cottage industry. So there's a lot of money on the table. And I just spoke to somebody yesterday. We're dropping a bomb here very soon. I'm waiting for the paperwork to come in. But, you know, this isn't even legally set up, let alone lawful. And 93.7% of the families that are in the DCF system in Massachusetts don't legally meet the threshold to have their children taken. To wit, the Rivera case I just documented for you.
Yes.
There is 93.7% of the children in the state don't legally meet the threshold. We're talking about almost 500,000 children a year, coast to coast, are in the system right now. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you about medical kidnapping after medical kidnapping case that make your hair stand on end.
What is the threshold?
Let's start with, how about real abuse? How about a child shows up to school with a broken arm and bruising all over the body?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Things like normal people would think would be abuse.
Yeah. And we're talking, again, this was we just went through COVID, right? And a lot of people didn't want to take the COVID shot. That's their choice. It was, mandates aren't laws. And we saw how many people got, in trouble in the military, or they lost their jobs in corporations. Because,
yeah,
again, a corporation is a withholding agent for the IRS, right? They collect your W-2, withhold your taxes. So they were, feeling the pressure. But, again, mandates don't equate to laws. And so people really need to get educated on this. And this is what our foundation is about, American Made Foundation. That is our 501c, the educational arm. That's why we create these documentaries, so people have a better handle on what's going on. And then our action arm, our C4, American Made Action, is giving people the tools to fight back. And this is why we are standing up and suing the state of Massachusetts, because we need to cut the head of the snake off. They've got far too many families in the system, not only there, but nationwide. Like I said, about 500,000 children are in this system right now. And again, most of them are not going to legally meet the threshold. And I just want to put this other idea. I live in a state where hurricanes hit us all the time. Natural disaster befalls us. You're in California. My goodness, you've had your fair share. So if that's, when these things happen, is FEMA the first one knocking on your door, or is your next door neighbor showing up, or an immediate family member down the street? It's always the latter. It's never the government entities that are there first. It's always neighbor helping neighbor. We have so much goodwill, so much charity in this country, that we can solve these issues for true families in distress, drug-addicted families. If the family members of those drug-addicted families aren't stepping in, neighbors typically do. I mean, I think we can all attest to somebody in our family or close friend that has been through some sort of crisis, or we helped them personally, or we knew people that did. We didn't have to bring the state involved. And that's what we're really working for. We work with other organizations, like America's Future has got a whole program for community-based parental support, for children who've been trafficked. These are all issues that can be handled and solved and remediated without federal or state intervention. And this is what we're really aiming for, because if you think back to how our country was founded, the state wasn't there to help you homestead. You had to go do it yourself. They're like, yeah, well, you can get out there, put a stake in the ground, we'll make sure it's yours.
Yeah.
You get your 20 acres.
Yeah.
That's what we're about. That's what we got to get back to.
Wow. I still can't get over the fact that they chased them to Texas. Just on this particular case, they chased them to Texas, and I'm not an attorney. I've stayed at a Holiday Inn Express, but you know, what the heck? You move to Texas, and then who arrests you? Like your local sheriff? They send what, warrants for you? For having violated the vitamin K laws of Massachusetts? That's crazy.
Think about it when right now we're challenged with trying to find a constitutional sheriff who will stand up for the people that elected and placed him or her there. They are very few and far between because they're on the payroll of the county. The county has been corporatized. They're getting, you know, federal dollars are trickling in. So we're no longer allowing our local municipalities and our counties to really be run and managed. And until we get back to that and we're not so beholden to the state federal funding, I mean, the federal government's out of control. Those bureaucracies should not have access to the money to spread it around the way they do because this is the industry they've created for themselves. And, you know, I've worked on pieces right now. We're in the middle of a massive IRS expose where we're proving that they're fabricating 1040s when you're not looking electronically and creating an electronic debit or a debt in your name. And then, you know, after 6 to 8 years, all of a sudden the United States Department of Justice comes down on you like a ton of bricks and, you know, goes after your assets and forces you into asset forfeiture. And it's theft. It's absolute theft. We've caught them. We have the documentation, the receipts. We've caught the attorneys in lies, the judges covering it all up. We have all the receipts. But again, we're still trying to figure out, well, to where do we go to get this whole thing shut down? You know, how are we going to do that?
Yeah.
So that requires Congress to get involved and shut it down. And we don't really have a Congress that wants to work with us now, do we? So, you know, this is really rolling into 2026 and the significance of that midterm and making sure we do not have machines in these elections. We have got to go to same-day voting, voter ID, paper ballots. Has to, if we want a temperature of who this country is. And I'm going to say this. If our country comes back socialist, communist, totalitarian, whatever, after paper ballot election, I will shut up and I will just go, that's fine. You guys want it? All right. You get what you get. But I know that's not true.
Yeah, I don't think that's true either. I don't think people, I don't think people really want those things. New York will be a tell though. You know, are they just only covering the loud voices or is that really something that people are looking at? I have a hard time believing that.
Why did they all end up in Florida during COVID? And I had to move out of my own little hometown I used to live in because it just got inundated with folks from New York and Connecticut. I didn't recognize my town anymore, so I moved further out into the country to get away from it.
Yeah,
it was so great. Why'd they leave?
It's kind of funny because we're in far northern California, the actual still free part. So in order to rein us in because we were bad during COVID and you know refoughts and wear masks and stuff. Not everybody, but...
Well, try to recall the governor, too.
Well, oh, yeah, there was that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember at one point, Bill and I were the only two people in the grocery store. This one night, we're the only two people in the grocery store not wearing a mask, and it was like... And, you know, to their credit, the grocery store didn't give us any crap. Shout out to Winco Foods. They never said a thing. Absolutely never said a thing. They will have my loyalty forever. Kind of a weird clientele, so it's, you know, it's a great place if you want to take those people of Walmart-ish photos. It's target-rich, but God bless them. They didn't get in anybody's face about, you know, not wearing the stupid mask, but the governor hates us, so and the legislature obviously is 100% Democrat. That's why we have Prop 50. They went and redrew the lines and created, they slurped us all in up here on the far northern end of the state with Sausalito. Like, okay. That's probably not going to be the best representation that we're going to have.
Are you guys doing stuff with Paul Preston?
We have not been. We don't really need 7 states or 4 or 16 or whatever it is he's doing these days. Because honestly, that means each one of those gets 2 senators, and those will all be Democrats. So we will explode the Democrat Party by doing that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Last time I talked to him, he was just doing the new state of California. I wasn't aware he was going into a lot more you know, subdivisions, if you will.
Yeah, it's like four. It's like four of them. And it's like, come on, guys. Like, if you look at their map, I don't know. There are people involved in that whole movement. I would have been still would be a fan of, like, the whole state of Jefferson idea where you do, like, a North Carolina, South Carolina, or a, you know, East and West Virginia type of an idea. You basically, you know, chop off the top part of the state and give the bottom part and don't make it all crazy. But, you know, that requires the legislature to get that ball rolling, and they have been unwilling to do that. So unwilling enough that they were willing to violate the state constitution using Texas as an excuse, because we all know that the only thing Trump had to do with the Texas redistricting was comment on it. They're required by a court to do it, but nobody even knows that. So, I mean, some people do, but it's frustrating. So, of course, it's to save democracy. And I'll tell you what, I hear that, and I just lights my hair on fire. It's a pet peeve.
I know. If I hear one more person call it a democracy, my head is going to explode.
Okay, you can add to that, because I work in natural resource policy a lot at the federal level, and you can add to that federal land. So every time you hear federal land, the buzzer should go off. It's public land. You own it.
That's
Stop calling it that.
But again, it's part of the whole, you know, indoctrination and brainwashing. They are so good at what they do in terms of just getting you to believe we're a democracy, because they just slip it in there and everybody says it. They're all mockingbird. They just all repeat it. And the next thing you know, in a generation, it's no longer a republic, it's a democracy. And we've been, you know, as a chorus of people on the conservative side, and everybody's smarter than the next one, so trying to hold hands and kumbaya and everybody get on the 4 a.m. talking points is next to impossible on our side. But if we don't set the ego aside and just do it, we are losing. I'm watching us lose our land. You know, last week in the Oval Office, seeing Borla in there, my head was, I couldn't hardly speak. I was so upset. I mean, it's been from the Charlie Kirk situation, then we lost our really good friend Boone Cutler, who worked with General Flynn, who's, you know, we're all very big supporters, and we work very closely with General Flynn on just trying to get America educated as to who we are, you know, and correct the disaster they've done in the last 30 years or 40 years under the Department of Education. I mean, it's really quite alarming what people think we are and what we really are and what we're not. And, you know, how far we are from what we really are supposed to be. We're just so way off the mark.
It's kind of funny because the Constitution is such a small document. I mean, just literally word-wise and volume-wise, it's very small. But I still run into people. I'm not from California. I've lived in all the bad places. Washington State, I grew up in Connecticut. It's like they implode, I move. So I guess I could be blamed. I mean, you could probably blame me for this. Maybe your Massachusetts guys are going to come after me for escaping California and bringing insanity to California. But I look at that, and there are people in this state who don't know that California has a state constitution.
They don't even
know that. I'm like, you realize Prop 50 violates the state constitution, right? And they're like,
what's that?
Yeah, they're like, well, why would that be in the Constitution? I'm like, it's in the state Constitution. We have our own, we have an additional Constitution. How's that? And they don't realize that we even have that. So, I mean, there's a real case to be made that there's some education required. It's funny because when you have to go, our next guest is a guy who wrote two textbooks. The title of it is Why Are Americans Ignorant of Our Own History? And his book. His
I have two words for you. Jimmy Carter.
Oh, man.
Well, I think you hit it on the head when you said Department of Education. They should have disbanded that a long time ago. That was a failed
experiment. We were getting that done. I thought that's what Linda McMahon was doing. Where are we with that? I don't know why that building has not been converted to a homeless shelter for veterans or homeless housing for veterans.
Yeah.
Forget a shelter.
Yeah.
Give it to them.
Yeah.
Give it to them.
It's all the, you know, nothing is ever simple because it's all got a million pieces, and some of the pieces actually hurt people if you get rid of them, so you got to find a spot for that piece. It's just, I don't know. You know, bigger is not always better, right?
No. I just want to go back to Article 1, Section 8. That's all we need. Let's go back to that. And once we, if we can achieve that, we will almost probably hit nirvana, because everything else can be sorted by private people.
Yeah.
Private organizations. It does not need to be this cluster that it is. It's disgusting.
Yeah. It just gets off the rails. Well, let's do some shameless promotion of your organization.
Okay, I love that. I love shameless promotion.
Yeah.
AmericanMadeFoundation.org is our nonprofit. We do a really good job with our documentaries and educating folks. Taken is front and center there. You can watch it. We've also got our other documentary, Ground Zero, North Carolina. I will be doing a follow-up on that because we exposed what FEMA was really doing. We exposed the National Defense Authorization Act, the land grabs, the natural resource grabs, and the abuse of the people, of which that's still very much ongoing. What's going on in North Carolina is an ongoing crime scene, and the federal government is front and center. Shocking, I know. And then, of course, American Made Action. If you want to take action, we've got a take action button. Go check out some of the things you can do to actually take action, to actually get your voice heard, because we are notifying Pam Bondi and the DOJ and local state representatives on a variety of issues on a regular basis. So go to AmericanMadeAction.org. And then, of course, any support is greatly appreciated. We are a small little organization, but we spread out very mightily. We've got some heavy hitters working with us on the United Law Coalition. We have about 1,000 attorneys and retired judges that we lean into it. Yeah. Yeah, and we're nationwide that way. And so when we need to take action, we lean into our organization and our relationships to do just a little damage here and there, but right, we're really looking to cut the heads of the snake of the agency government out, and we're going through CPS first. Children need to be saved and liberated, and of course the parents need to be liberated from the tax burden of the IRS. That's critical.
Yeah. Well, okay, so back on the vaccine thing, I receive calls from people all the time. Most recently was a woman whose son was getting ready to start. He's like 4, so I don't know if you go to kindergarten when you're 4 now. I'm a little out of that loop. But anyway, he was going to school, right, regular school, and they wanted him to have whole host of vaccines, and she wanted to spread them out rather than have these, a whole bunch of vaccines in one shot.
Right.
He has a bunch of allergies, and as she was reading through the ingredients, she's like, this is an anaphylaxis response that my son will have if he has this one, so he can't have this one. Oh, well, your kid can't go to school. Do you guys get involved in any of that, or is that state by state? Or?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because we're actually in the process of meeting with some folks that are in this Florida State Senate up in Tallahassee. We're getting ready to write legislation. We've also got another little bomb that we're going to drop that's going to basically prove that Department of Children and Families nationwide shouldn't even exist. There is no authorization for it to exist, period. But when it comes down to doing individual cases, we don't do individual cases. We look at it as how do we provide a solution statewide?
Sure.
We're not funded to take up everybody's case. I wish we were.
But do you have like a, is this, I was looking mostly, I mean, it would be great if you could take up everybody's case, but is there a resource for them that would help them defend themselves? Or do they really need to find an attorney?
No, and we are more than happy to connect them with resources to help them defend themselves. And again, like I said, on our Take Action website on AmericanMadeAction.org, you can find some of the resources you would need there in terms of, if you're looking for religious, something just went by me and it's
Something shiny went by the window. That never happens. I just want you to know that never happens.
Shiny object went by the window. Religious exemption. If you're looking for religious exemptions, things like that, that you can use to leverage in the school community. But again, we are focused on the legislative side of things, frankly, to end things like what you guys see happening in California, right? You've got your own situation brewing in California with some of the, mandatory school vaccines. And the elimination of the non-medical exemptions, I think it was Senate Bill 277, right? You guys passed that in 2015?
Yes.
Things like that. We are focused on trying to get legislation done and also some of the legislation undone. For instance, DCF in Florida, like DCF in Massachusetts, like DSS in North Carolina, and whatever the acronym is in every single state, they're all federally funded. And so when you have cases like the Rivera's, which show that federal money was used to track down and arrest a family, separate their children, and spend untold thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars with five kids in the system,
yeah,
plus the attorneys, et cetera, when you find out and can prove that that was done unlawfully and it had deleterious impacts, now you're talking about going after and saying, this is why this needs to be shut down. There is no, 94% of the cases in the state of Massachusetts don't lawfully belong in the system. So we have to do something about that, which means they need to, eliminate the program. It's doing far more harm than good. And so this is where we're talking about having an impact so that the individual cases, one by one, don't have to be addressed on a regular basis. You're not dealing with tens of thousands of these cases across the nation at any given time, which is costing millions and millions of dollars at any given time. We want to stop it and, bring these solutions back into the community. So this is the focus of our organization. And, when it comes, like I said, the onesie, twosies, individual cases, we can always point them to different entities that do that. We just do not.
Okay.
Because we got a stake in the ground and say, you know what, we're going to end the nightmare for these people by shutting down this agency. As opposed to, I see mom and dad over here with their kids being taken away. We have to get them attorneys and lawyer up in court. All we're doing is feeding the system. We want to end the system. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And tell me this, is the religious exemption still a... It seems like that kind of got cut off at the knees. Is that still a valid defense, if
That's
you will?
It is a very valid defense, but again, it's state by state. And, like I said, Florida has drawn a line in the sand. And the state here, our state, I can speak very intelligently on what's happening in our state. They said enough is enough. Parents, not the bureaucrats, not the unelected medical boards, and not the government agencies are actually now having their final say when it comes to the children's health and well-being. And we actually became the first state last month in the nation to move towards ending, like I said, all childhood vaccine mandates. So again, we stand firmly in medical exemptions, we stand firmly in religious exemptions, and now we're moving more towards the parents really have a choice, there is no mandate, so that we don't have to worry about little Johnny or little Peggy
sure.
in kindergarten or pre-K being all vaxxed up before they can walk into school. And at this point, the amount of vaccines they're wanting to pump in these kids is criminal. I mean, it's absolutely criminal. I think we all saw President Trump and RFK a couple of weeks ago during that press conference. It was an interesting press conference because RFK were well-polished and well-heeled with what they were saying. And President Trump was really allowed to sort of go all over the place. And while he did mention, Tylenol, to me that was the red herring. I kept hearing him slam Big Pharma about how many vaccines and how it's a big blob and you could take an elephant down with it. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't think if Pfizer's listening to this, they're going to be happy. But then we saw Pfizer in the Oval last week. So, who really knows what's happening there? Is he trying to control Pfizer? Is he putting him over a barrel because they're now having to give their medicine and their pharmaceuticals at a much reduced cost rate, right? Yeah, right. But the other elephant in the room is we still haven't ended RNA. We've got to end those RNA jabs because the mRNA stuff is a very deadly platform. The data is coming out daily about how deadly it is. I have four family members who didn't listen to me. They took multiple vaccines, and I've got two serious turbo cancers. I've got a neurological issue, very severe, and I've got myocarditis that ended up in open heart surgery. So, and this is three of my brothers and sisters and my mother-in-law.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's, they're not out of the woods by any stretch of the means. One of them with the turbo has three metastatic cancers. Formerly lived in Tiburon, by the way. So not too far. Yeah. So, this is what we're dealing with. We have massive impacts around this country, and I'm not an unusual situation. I know a lot of people like me with family members that can listen. And,
well, it kept happening over and over and over and over, and I still hear people, I forget, where was I? A pharmacy or something? And, you want your flu shot and your COVID booster? And I'm like, hard pass on both. No, when I stopped getting the flu shot, 15 years ago, or it was kind of a long time ago, I did it like two or three times. And every single year, I was super sick. But I have a ton of allergies, and so I don't put things in there that I can't, you know, that I can't define. My doctor always laughs. He's like, he goes, you're old. You should get a shingles vaccine. He goes, but it's you, so it's probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I know. So at least he gets it. But they, they're constantly, you know, I quit getting the flu shot. I quit getting the flu. I mean, I'm not sick in the winter from anything other than, you know, asthma related stuff, but,
And you know what? You probably got the asthma from getting all the vaccines because it debilitated your immune system.
I don't know. In 1961, were we giving us a lot of vaccines? It was kind of a while ago. I don't know.
I don't know if we got that many back then, but. I don't know either. I don't know how many we got. I know I got a bunch in 67, and, you know, I was born in 67, so, yeah, I got a bunch.
It's funny because all my siblings, five of us in 7 years, my folks are pro-life Catholics, obviously, and my other siblings don't have all that stuff, but I do. I sort of got all that at the front end, so I think some of us are just, you know.
More prone.
Yeah, but, you know, I could have been born stupid, so. What a break.
Clearly not. Clearly not. You're hosting your own radio show. I don't think so.
Yeah, score. But, yeah, I've laughed about that for years. I'm like, well, you know, we all have choices. Got to have something. But I do think the religious exemption, people had great success with that on the vaccine front at the beginning, especially with the COVID deal. That was really where that kind of hit mainstream knowledge outside even just the parent groups. But I think that now they're really cracking down on that. It's like, yeah, no, we're not going to do that anymore. And that's what this lady found. And that's here in the county where I live. So
right.
I need to need to call her. I was excited to speak with you when I saw your Publius PR when they shot that out. I was like, oh, yes, we want to talk to her. And I thought, then I need to get some resources and call this lady back and give her a heads up. So,
no, I'm so glad you did, because, you know, this is such a big conversation, and every state is different. Every state has, you know, has a fiduciary duty to protect its citizens. And, you know, this here in Florida, we have legislation like Senate Bill 1722, right? This would stop Child Protective Services from launching investigations just because a parent's medical or religious choices don't match what the government prefers, which, frankly, the government should have absolutely no say in that. That's such an absurd thing on its face. But it is what we're dealing with, so you have to address it. Until we can rein it all in, you've got to stop it. And bills like Senate Bill 1288, those also demand full parental consent before schools or doctors can actually make any decisions about your child's body or psychological treatment. I mean, I know California has gone nuts. You guys now can have somebody claim to say, oh, I'm little Johnny's whatever, and take them out of school. It's just so absurd.
Well, that or, you know, decide that they're going to turn them into, you know, a raccoon or a girl whatever.
I'm not sure. Right.
So we're going to do all that. And so everybody can kind of do whatever they want, which obviously never works. I mean, that isn't something that works. So we'll have to obviously correct the course. And
this is what I love about Florida, because here, this isn't about for our state, which I really hope, you know, people listen to this and take it to heart. It's not about anti-vaccine. It's not even about anti-science.
No,
it's all
about
pro-parents.
Anti-parents. Yeah.
It's about turning you, making you pro-parent, pro-choice, pro-freedom. Because once the state can decide what's best for your child, that's not medicine anymore, folks. That's control. And nobody, nowhere, no how did God say in the Bible, or just, you know, the doctrine of life, that somebody else gets to control you. That's just anti-human.
Yeah.
And so we have got to get back to some serious common sense, true freedom. I don't think people know what it means to be free, because we've grown up in a government that, you know, regulates every aspect of our life. It's so much worse than it was 250 years ago when we threw a bunch of tea in the harbor.
Well, it blows my mind, though, the people who are very pro-freedom cracks me up. In the course of a conversation, they'll say, and I guess if I was going to pick the most common one, the government needs to do something about all these spam texts. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
So, A, that would be really hard, because most of them come from outside the country, the really annoying ones that you can't stop. So they come from outside the country, but you do realize they would have to allow text to come to you, which means they would be filtering everything that's coming to you. Does that doesn't that kind of seem like a bad idea?
Yeah.
And, you know, so it does kind of blow my mind. People keep asking for more and more and more regulation. It's like, at some point, you know, this is not, that's not the fix.
It's not the fix.
Not the fix.
It's not the fix.
And bad things
definitely
will happen.
Not.
Well, Ann Vandersteel with American Made, I've got your state-sanctioned kidnapping video posted. I have your American Made Foundation up, and I have American Made Action links up on our site, so they can go click on all of those, read all the stuff, and we hope you will come on with us. I know we said a half hour, and we've shanghaied you for longer than a half hour, so we don't want to be rude about it.
No, you're great. I've enjoyed the conversation with you guys. They're fantastic, and God bless you. You're out there in California, the People's Republic thereof, and you are just swinging from all the vines and the trees. I love it.
Oh, yeah. You know, one time they did throw a rock through the window of the studio, but, you know, other than that, it's been relatively trouble-free.
Shiny objects and all.
Yeah, there was that. There was that. It was. We were talking about transgender, so, you know, leave it to history to decide if that was a connected event or not. But I know, right? We laughed too. We thought that was not pretty self-evident. We hope to have you on again, and we want to hear the rest of the case. How about that?
Yeah, we'll keep you posted.
Yes, please.
Because we're about to launch some pretty significant litigation efforts here.
Nice.
And I'm pretty sure they're not going to be happy with us, so maybe we'll get a couple of rocks to our window, but I'm not particularly bothered by it.
No.
Great.
We weren't either. It's been 15 years, for heaven's sakes. Change the channel if you don't like us.
That's it.
That's fantastic. That's so it. We look forward to speaking with you again. And,
thank you. Me too.
And everything is posted on the site. We're going to come back with Alan. Oh, man, I should have asked how he says his name. I think it's, I don't know what it is, G-U-E-L-Z-O. So somebody call and tell us how that's pronounced. But he's going to tell us why Americans are ignorant of our own history. And I'll let you know what we learn.
I'd love to know. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on, Ann.
Ann Vandersteel's been our guest with the American Made Foundation. She's terrific. You can find all that information at wethepeopleradio.us. Like that song, something very American about it. Okay, so our professor is missing. We've lost the professor. Hopefully he'll call us. Is it because I didn't know how to pronounce his last name?
He gave up on you.
Ruined it. So why are Americans ignorant of our own history? Coming to the airwaves near you at some point in time. But I'll give you his bio. just for a second here. So we already have that in the hopper. So he is the Thomas W. Smith Distinguished Research Scholar in the James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions and the faculty member at Princeton University. He's also the co-author of a new textbook, The Golden Thread, A History of Western Tradition. It's a two-volume set, by the way. And it really, I mean, it does look incredibly interesting, but I really wanted him to tell me about it. So cross our fingers. He's an American intellectual historian, a noted media guest who's appeared on major radio and television programs nationwide. Yes, it will be We the People at some point, but he's also been on NPR, something called Morning Edition. And, he's been on Jon Stewart, The Daily Show. He's been on Morning Joe. Yeah. Maybe he found out who we are. He's like, they're wingers. I don't want to go on with them. The wingers are going to get me. He's a frequent contributor to the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Monthly. He's a three-time winner of the Lincoln Prize for his books on Abraham Lincoln and the American Civil War. His book, Gettysburg, The Last Invasion, spent 8 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. So he is no slouch. And you know, it's fun. I always go into the image, thing in, you know, Google when I look up things about our guests to build the webpage. And there was this terrific picture of him wearing a red tie. He looks just like Kelsey Grammer. And he has this really fun smirk on his face. And I was like, dying to know if he's really smirky or not. So I do hope he, pops on with us. So in the meantime, we are going to, chat with you momentarily about Prop 50, just in case you're still in the dark about Prop 50. I hope you're not, though.
I think a lot of people have a misconception of why we're doing this.
Oh,
you know,
that's true.
It's Trump. It's Texas. It's, you know, democracy. Maybe you can clear that up a little bit. Because the whole Texas thing was Texas didn't have a choice.
Texas didn't have a choice. There was a court action that involved representation, right? So it goes to court, and they said, well, you have to redraw your lines. They're not fair.
And was that because of all the new districts, or were the new districts as a result of the new lines?
Yes, all the way around, I think. Bottom line was they let's start at the beginning. So Texas does not have a constitutional amendment that determines when they draw lines. So if they wanted to draw lines every year, which would make no sense, but like let's say they went crazy and just were hooked on that, they could do that anytime they want. There is no constitutional amendment declaring when that takes place. California, on the other hand, is every 10 years after the census. That is a part of our constitution, our state constitution. The other thing in Texas is that they, Once they do this, they can be enacted. There's no citizen, and it's done by the legislature. It's not a citizens redistricting commission like California has. I don't think most people really, I don't know. I'm going to say a lot of people are not plugged into that idea, but California passed a constitutional amendment yet again back in, I want to say 2008.
A California
constitutional amendment that said that the lines are not drawn by the legislature because, well, what could go wrong, right? So many jokes, so little time. So they said, you know, these guys are drawing lines just to benefit themselves. This is crazy. We're going to have the citizens do it. So we passed an amendment that said that our lines are drawn. Our voting lines for congressional districts and assembly and state senate are drawn by the independent citizens redistricting commission. So every 10 years, you could apply for that, by the way. If you're a citizen of California, you could apply to be on that. It's a lot of work. Boy, I sat through a lot of those meetings back in, I want to say 2010, had to have been 2010. And it's complicated. It's a lot of work. The idea is that you try to keep communities together. So if you have a predominantly agricultural area, you don't connect it to San Francisco, like, say, the new lines for District 2 will be in California. So you try to keep people kind of together. You can't always divide by county. Sometimes people are across the street from each other and they're in different districts, so that's kind of a drag, but it's numbers. So you want all the districts to have the same population. If they don't, bottom line is you have one representative who has 1.5 million people and another guy who's got 500,000, who technically is getting better representation, obviously, mm-hmm. guy with the smaller district. So anyway, they...
So each district has to have...
Basically the same number yeah. of people. Okay. And so like in Northern California, for instance, our district lines changed pretty... They changed a lot, actually, this last round in 2020 because we had so many fires. They had fires that burned down whole towns. So you had large swaths of people who were displaced, and you had to find more people to add. So you had to, you know, move the line a little bit and add a volume of people to make up that difference. But in November of 2008, it was Proposition 11 called the Voters First Act that authorized the creation of the Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission. That was supported by AARP, the Los Angeles Chamber of Commerce, League of Women Voters, former Governor Gray Davis, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, the ACLU, California Black Chamber of Commerce, Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, NAACP, California Police Chiefs Association, California Forward, Pasadena City Council. So this was not a right-wing,
right.
weird idea. It was...
That's a lot of support.
Yeah. They just wanted lawmakers not to draw their own districts. So it was passed by 61.3% of the voters in 2010. And if you're curious about that, you can go to wedrawthelines.ca.gov. I have all this posted. Actually, you can go to ShastaGOP.com, click on Prop 50, and it has all of that information on there. So they decided, well, Texas, if they redraw these lines, is going to create, just based on population, likely 5 Republican seats. So the bad part was President Trump said, hey, that's great. And the Democratic Party in California, you know, led by Gavin Newsom, said, Trump is stealing elections. He's creating 5 Republican seats. We must respond. That wasn't even true.
Yeah, he just commented on it.
Holy cow, I'm just so totally blowing it.
I'm going to do bad things. Do it like it's nothing. Being bad has never felt so good. I'm gonna do bad things. You won't see it coming. Watch your step. I've been thinking of doing bad things to you.
Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Bill, I've got a, here we go. I do have a promotion.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I've got actually all the information this week.
Wow.
McDonald's, budget printing and copies. I'm throwing out another recommendation for them. If you live in the Reading area, they are at 2647 Bocelli Lane, and they are open Monday through Thursday, 8 to 5, and Fridays, 8 to 2, but I was there at 3 and they were still there, so Fridays are flexible. But they are great, and they'll whatever you're trying to print, big giant pictures, or you need a whole bunch of copies, or you need some quick, you know, business cards or something like that, these guys are terrific. So they are right by the bowling alley there. Liquor Barn and H&R Block. I probably should say H&R Block since a lot of people are probably just there. Those guys are terrific. Their phone number is 530-222-0322, but you should just go in. Because every time I've needed something, I basically just waited or I left for an hour and came back and it was done. So, can't say that enough about, businesses in town. Any other things we were supposed to announce?
I We have a guest.
Phil's got the blank look.
Well, let's introduce our guest.
I have not stumped the panel in a long time, so no. You were due. All right. So today, we're chatting with a comedian. How great is that? You can't have too many comedians on Sunday. Oh, Salvador Letvac. So excited. He has this terrific book, Let My People Laugh, The Greatest Jewish Jokes of All Time. And as a kid who grew up in Connecticut in a Jewish neighborhood, I gotta say, this is exciting for me. Let's see, he was born in Santiago, Chile, which was kind of confusing when I first saw that. Moved to New York at the age of 5. He's a graduate of Harvard College with an English degree. Went to NYU Law School. And it just says NYU Law School, but I did a little more homework. He actually got his law degree, passed the bar, and practiced law. Then he went to the School of Theater, Film, and Television at UCLA. And
that sounds like a lot more fun.
Practiced law and went, he'll tell us the rest. He wrote, produced, and directed Saving Lincoln, the true story of Abraham Lincoln leading the nation through the Civil War, as recounted by his close friend and bodyguard, U.S. Marshal Ward Hill Lehman. The film was made by capturing the actors' performances on green screen stage and creating all the sets and locations out of vintage Civil War photographs from the Library of Congress. Pretty neat. Named his visual style Cinecollage. His first film was a Passover comedy. Can't have too many Passover comedies. Out here in the West, I don't think they fully appreciate it, but in the East, guarantee you they watch this every year. It's called When Do We Eat? It stars Max Greenfield, Jack Klugman, Ben Fieldman, Cherie Appleby, Leslie Ann Warren. So really cool people. He wrote both films with his wife, Nina. And he also blogs as the Accidental Talmudist for the Jewish Journal of Los Angeles. I got a thing from A.J. Rice that he had made comments on several things, actually. And the most recent was Trump backs the $5,000 baby bonus for new moms in a bid to reverse the declining birth rate. And he had has a fun post, and I'm not going to read it because that'll wreck it. I'm going to let him do it. Sal, how's it going?
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me on the show.
I like your thing, my pal Sal.
I am your pal Sal. You haven't even met yet, not your pal.
My pal Sal. I saw that. I was like, oh, yes. So were you funny in law school, and did they appreciate that?
There were a lot of dry people in law school, believe it or not. And that's probably why I'm a recovering attorney.
You went to court and you were like, what? It doesn't get more fun there either? Dang it. That's funny. I discovered that teaching. I went and got my credential and went to school. I was like, oh, my gosh, it's just like when I was a kid. I'm in trouble all the time.
You've got to love what you do. And if you can say that, then you never work a day in your life.
Oh, there you go. Well, I have no idea where you'd like to start today, but we want to plug all your things, including your new film, Guns and Moses, which I just thought was hilarious. But it doesn't sound hilarious. It actually sounds kind of serious.
It's an action thriller. It's coming out this summer in theaters across America, starring Mark Feuerstein, Christopher Lloyd, Neil McDonough, and Dermot Mulroney. And it's a story of a rabbi whose community is violently attacked. And when the police won't investigate, he has to become the detective. And as he gets closer to the truth, the danger piles up. People get killed, and he has to learn how to use a gun and use it effectively. And the firearms training that the rabbi goes through in the movie is based on my own training in a security organization. You know, I didn't grow up as a gun guy, but I'm an Orthodox Jew. I'm a visible Jew, and there's a lot going on in the world now that's dangerous.
Yeah,
and so a lot of us have, you know, bought guns and learned how to use them and got licensed for CCW. And please God, we should never need these skills. But if we do, we will not be a soft target.
No, I think you're exactly right. And the people who think that that's unnecessary, what would you say to them? Just, you know.
I think wake up and join the real world. I mean,
yeah.
You know, my mother was a Holocaust survivor. My grandmother carried her as an infant to a concentration camp. Unbelievable,
oh,
miracle story. And so the Holocaust is something she's very aware of all growing up. And we have this phrase, you know, never again.
Yep.
Well, for about 80 years after the Holocaust, it was at least you know, unattractive or unfashionable for anti-Semites to spew their hatred, their racism out loud. That's over. These people feel perfectly comfortable saying online, in person, on TV, they hate Jews, they want Jews dead, they want Israel eliminated. It's incredible. You know, and my grandmother, my mom, they always said, yeah, it could happen in America too. And we're like, no, come on, not here, never here. Times have changed.
Are you shocked to, I guess you're really not, but I'll ask it. You had written also something about Harvard fighting Trump on the reasonable conditions. You know, here you're an alum of Harvard, and at the time when you were attending, I'm sure it was probably just fine.
I never experienced any anti-Semitism there. And now when I hear what's been going on, I mean, October 7th was the worst, most deadly day for Jews since the Holocaust. And October 8th, in many ways, was even worse. All of a sudden, erupting around America, you know, from the river to the sea, eliminates Israel before Israel had even begun its response. It's incredible to me how many, you know, for lack of a better phrase, useful idiots there are in America who just allow themselves to be manipulated. And told that, yeah, the entire Middle East conflict can be reduced to white people are oppressing brown people, and therefore Israel is bad. It has nothing to do with that. Israelis are not white. The Palestinians are not brown. And the whole thing is fabricated. It's a lie. And anybody who's curious about the situation doesn't feel like they know enough, just start by looking at a map.
Yeah.
Israel is so tiny. It's such a tiny little sliver, the Jewish homeland, the only Jewish homeland, to say that there's no room for Israel in the massive Arab Muslim world, which is hundreds of millions of people and, you know, curvature of the earth size landmass.
Well, Israel fits, could fit eight times in the state of California.
Yeah, it's
easily.
Yeah.
Easily.
I mean, that's just ludicrous.
Yeah.
That's the one small piece, and the opposition, I don't know what the landmass is of the opposition in scale, but eight Israels fit into the state of California? I mean, it's big, but not that big.
No, it's just nothing. You know, 8 million people surrounded by 500 million people, the whole population of Gaza, it's like if they would move, you know, 10, 20 miles away. End of problem. But no, that can't happen. And they just, I mean, imagine if your neighbor came over and started shooting your children and he was holding his child in front of him as a shield.
Right.
At the time that he's shooting at your kids. What, you're not going to shoot back to defend your kids? Of course you are. And then when his kid gets killed because he sacrificed him, right, the child sacrificing death cult. That's what's going on in Gaza.
Yeah.
And so then when we fight back to protect our families, you know, we're the bad guys.
Right. Or he paints a big red cross on the front of his house and pretends he's a hospital.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, you almost kind of can't make that up. Like on your list in one of the emails I received, you said it was hilarious that Harvard would go to court to fight against the scholarly mission of the university, merit-based hiring and admissions, viewpoint diversity, and eradicating anti-Semitism and DEI bloat. I mean, that's a fairly concise list, and it does make them sound mentally ill.
Very good. You summed it up much more succinctly than I could.
I mean, it's sad. Exactly. It's really sad and kind of crazy. And it's fascinating to me that anyone would feel good about defending that. But it's interesting because even here, we're at the far end of the state from you, and they're having a protest. Let's see if I can pull this up. I thought, are you guys kidding? What the heck are you doing? They're having a protest here it is. It's a call to action. Now, we're in a town with 90,000 people, so it's not a huge place. We're not incredibly diverse like a lot of places. So here, we deserve a call to action. We deserve a representative who puts people over profit, who fights the voices of who fights for the voices of the community, not someone pushing a personal agenda, show up and disrupt. We're protesting, and they're protesting one of the members of the Board of Supervisors. But it's fascinating to me because they're not just protesting. This is come in block, BLOC. I guess that's a thing now. They call it black block. So BLACK, like the color, and then BLOC. It isn't just protection, it's power. Show up in black and mask up so we can demonstrate. Yeah, so we can resist as one united force. We keep us safe. Their writing is almost hard to read because it's illiterate. I have trouble with illiteracy. My degree was in English as well. It's painful. Actually, I'm like, whoever's organizing your writing, you need to fire them. We keep us safe through unity, solidarity, and action. By wearing all black and having a mask on your face. Yeah. And marching.
They're proud about what they're doing, so let's mask up.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
If your cause is righteous, why are you masking up?
Exactly.
Yeah, show up and disrupt. We're protesting this guy's business. Is it they're going to be in front of his business to reject his leadership and ensure we are heard? Now, I'm sorry, but showing up with a mask and protesting someone's business doesn't make me, the business owner, want to go outside and say, oh my gosh, are you having a problem? How can I help you? Like
you also read to me a lot of words. I still don't know what their position is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's,
what are they protesting?
Yeah, it's a big zero. I'm not going to promote their thing, so I'm not going to. It's like every day, though. They're going to be there every day. So we deserve a rep who puts people over profit, who fights for the voices of the community. Well, you can't fight for a voice, but okay. Not someone pushing his personal agenda. And I'm like, he's one guy on a board of five people. Right? So how much of a voice do you really have? Like one-fifth, actually. That would be the math part. God. It's terrifying. It's kind of interesting, though. It just worked out. You would think I did it on purpose. I wish I could say I did. But the second hour today, we have the terrorist therapist, Carol Lieberman. And so she's talking about, you know, all these protesters are terrorist pawns and open the floodgates to jihad in our streets. And I was like, huh, well, this is a nice little bookend we got going.
I mean, listen, they're very cynical, but very organized, well-funded, and they are executing a game plan that they put into place more than 30 years ago.
Yep.
They said, we are going to infect American academia with this narrative that, you know, Israel bad, Jews bad, and that's going to be an intersectionality, you know, with other minority causes. Never mind, there's no logic there, but if we put enough money into it, we can, and repeat the lie often enough, people will believe it, and the teachers will teach it. And it's happened.
Yep.
You know? These people, they got game. They're evil, but they got game. And we have to be aware of what they're doing.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, Dr. Charles Asher Small, I had the opportunity to meet him down at the Israeli consulate in San Francisco a couple of years ago, and super, super nice man. But the one thing I walked away with in that meeting was he had said, as soon as you see the rise of anti-Semitism, you're looking at the end of a culture.
Just so.
And it was
just
like,
so. And that's a lesson from history.
Yep, and he was way ahead. It wasn't a couple of years. It's been longer ago than it was, way before any of these things happened. And at the time, I believed him because we've always had anti-Semitism, but it was unpopular, like you said. It was super unpopular.
It wasn't out in the open like it is now.
No.
No.
Now it's like just throw down. I mean, when we were kids, I mean, we were the Irish Catholic family that moved into the Jewish neighborhood, you know. And so they went to Christmas at our house. We went to, you know, Hanukkah at their house. It was fun. We had a great time. And now there's just, it's almost like there's just this massive cultural shift that has made it, I don't know, do you think it's actually culturally acceptable to be an anti-Semite now?
I think there's a few people who would like that to be the case, and they're loud and annoying, but I don't think they represent America at all. Sadly, a lot of the gatekeepers of culture in America, and I'm talking about the mainstream media, they are infected with anti-Semitism, but they don't represent America.
No.
How much time do we have? I'll share a story with you that I'm sure you'll appreciate, but how much time do we have?
Why don't you do that? Share the story, because we're going to take a light break because I'm having trouble typing. I'm having a little spaz attack at the end of my arms here, trying to send him the music I want to use.
but just quickly, you know, when our movie we finished cutting it, it's got a rabbi with a gun, right? So we showed it to a big agent at an agency, you know, here in Hollywood. Jewish guy, completely not religious, and he says, great movie, really entertaining, you guys are going to make good money in streaming. I said, well, thank you, but I think it's a theatrical film. He says, yeah, but how many Jews are there really, New York, L.A., Florida? I said, well, it's an important part of our audience, but a much bigger part of our audience is conservatives, Christians, people who support Israel, and we're going to enjoy this movie. He says, what are you talking about? Those people hate Jews.
It's like,
wow.
Have you ever met the people that you fly over between New York and L.A.? Because you are clueless. I mean, you know, I share Torah and authentic Jewish teachings and history with a big audience of a million followers on Facebook. Probably half, maybe a little more than half, are not Jewish. They tend to be conservative and Christian. And so I know this audience. I know them very well. And we tested the film, and we know that the film is going to do great with that audience. But the fact that a guy who's a tastemaker in Hollywood with, you know, some kind of power and say is that far off, that mistaken about who America is, you know, tells you everything you need to know about these cultural gatekeepers in America. They've lost the plot.
Yeah. Well, it's a very small percentage of America, like you said, but it's very much like the LGBTQ QTXYZ crowd. I mean, it's like a 1% group of people that make all the noise, and it makes it look like it's the majority, and it's a tiny minority of people.
No, they're sucking up all the bandwidth.
Yeah.
Hey, so I found the songs. I went on a quest last night. I decided, you know what, Sal deserves some fun songs, not my usual 611 possible options. There must be more. There must be more. And I found this group called 613.
They're great.
Oh, my gosh. They were amazing. They're kind of like the Jewish version of Pentatonix. Everything is a cappella. So all the sounds you hear, none of them come from musical instruments, only the people, these six guys. And the group name is spelled S-I-X, like the actual writing of the, you know, the actual spelling of the number. And then the number 1 and the number 3. So S-I-X-1-3. You should look them up on YouTube. They are super talented and hilarious at the same time, actually, in some of their songs. So we're going to take a quick break. And we're going to come back with our super fun guest, Sal Lipbeck. In just a couple seconds, you're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
And I think it's gonna be a long 8 nights to celebrate the festival of life, commemorate the miracle of oil. Oh, yes, God, don't. I'm a like a man. Like a man, I'm frying up this food of potato.
We can never know what it's like, only having oil left for just one night. Just a tiny light that shines so true, but then a miracle occurred. It burned for 8 nights through. Don't you know that we're still standing each and every year? 'Cause the Jews are true survivors. Yeah, we beat the cell, you sit. And the Michael Beats, who wouldn't give up on love.
They have a whole montage. It's called Elton Johnica. I saw that. I'm like, this can't be real. Yeah.
Those guys are great.
They are great. They just are really fun. They do a lot of touring, too. I mean, they're not just like some little one-off, you know, group. They've been around for a while, and they have a volume of music. Bill kept saying, that's got to be drums. They've got drums. I'm like, no, I researched. They've got nothing. It's just them. Yeah, really fun. So, Sal, go back to the baby thing, because I don't want people to be cheated out of the story that I didn't read, but I did link. So,
which story?
With Trump's whole proposal to have more babies. Your story linked the baby blessing, 11 kids in 5 years, actually. That's what I called the show today.
very good. Very good. Yeah, no, that's a joke from the book, from Let My People Laugh, the greatest Jewish jokes of all time, bestseller on Amazon. But a rabbi is visiting a town. People are coming to see him to get a blessing. And so this woman says, you know, we've been married a few years. We haven't been able to have children. So the rabbi writes down the name of the woman and her husband, and he says, I'll put this note in the Western Wall, right? The holiest place on earth. The people come to pray, and we've been there. Everybody writes their prayer on a note and puts it in a crack in the wall there in Jerusalem. So, he does that. 5 years later, he visits his town again, and he runs into the woman. He says, oh, how's it going? And she says, oh, rabbi, fantastic. He says, have you been able to have a baby? She says, rabbi, we have 11 kids. He says, 11 kids? He says, yeah, after you're here and give us a blessing, well, 9 months later, we had twins. And then we had twins again. And then we had another child. And then we had triplets. And then we had twins again. And he says, wow, that's incredible. And tell me, what's going on with your husband? And she says, well, he's in Israel right now. Really? What's he doing there? He's at the wall looking for that note.
I was like, yeah, that's... Gotta be careful what you wish for. So, yeah, maybe you need to shoot that over to the White House next time President Trump goes to Israel. We can...
Of course we can laugh, but... It is very true that when a population cannot replace itself, that's a sign that a civilization is dying. I read a really interesting book by this guy, David Goldman, about how civilizations die. And it's that. And if you look back in time, you know, late stage Rome, other empires, it's like the ruling class gets soft and they're more interested in their own material comfort, than in raising families and transmitting their values. And then they become vulnerable. To other civilizations, other, you know, nations that are more focused on the future. I mean, in Europe, forget about it. They're not anywhere near replacement. And just in order to have young people around to do the jobs, they invited in this huge wave of immigration. Now they're having huge problems over there, needless to say. And, one of the few places in the world where you've got a population reproducing itself handily is Israel. I think they're like at over three, fertility rates, how many kids people are having.
Right.
And you've got to be, and China, they have not been replacing themselves. And then, too late, they start to realize, wait a minute, this wasn't such a good idea. We drank the Kool-Aid on overpopulation, but we're not anywhere near overpopulation. Nations need to have a next generation. And when they do, when they start focusing on, well, what kind of a world am I going to hand to my kids, their values are very different. These people who are not getting married, not having kids, not thinking about the future, their priorities are not what America needs. And I think people are starting to understand that.
Yeah, and the whole idea that, well, we can just import all of the workers, I mean, that just... Your point is well taken. It has not worked out well.
You're not importing our culture, and so you end up being somebody else.
Yeah. And I'm all for legal immigration.
Of course.
And when you have legal immigration, it's done in a measured way that makes sense for that country, because you're thinking about, okay, what are the priorities of this country? Who do we need? Who's going to be good for the country? But when it's being done illegally, and laws aren't being enforced, then you have no idea who's coming over the border. And those millions of people who came across over the last 4 years before this administration, we don't know who they are. We don't know where they are. But I think we can be sure that some very bad actors came along with the people who were just, it's not all people just seeking jobs. There were some bad people mixed in there.
Oh, sure.
And I hope to God they don't, you know, kill more Americans, but that's something we all need to be praying for.
Well, that's kind of the thing, is when you bring people in and there are no, you know, my thing is always, if it doesn't work with kids and dogs, it isn't going to work anywhere else either. And with kids and dogs, you know, you have no rules, nothing good happens. You don't get good kids or good dogs. You have to have framework and rules. And a process, real process.
If you love them, you have framework and rules. It's for their good that you have framework and rules, of course.
Yeah, the idea that we just, you know, throw the doors open and everybody just comes running in and gets to do whatever they want.
Yeah, our immigration system worked for many, many, many years, but there was a screening process, and we brought in the best, the brightest, and the immigrants that came in had to be able to provide for themselves, had to have a skill, had to be healthy. We did none of that in the last few years. I mean, there were people coming across with diseases and no job skills. Couldn't speak the language. I mean, and it's all coming back to roost right now. Look what we have. I mean, we've got a mess right now we're trying to clean up. And how do you go about doing that without looking like an ogre, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the real kicker, because then you're mean, right?
You want to hear another joke?
Yes, please.
A little bit relevant, but we'll definitely make people laugh.
Yes, I love your relevant jokes.
In my book,
if you haven't noticed,
in my book, the jokes are all numbered because, you know, sometimes you need the greatest joke for a toast at a wedding or for a lunch with business or a golf outing. You know, depending on the situation, you need a different kind of joke. And so I have lists at the front, you know, greatest jokes for those situations.
Oh.
So this is joke number 73 in the book. Right? And it says, back in the days when millions of Jews lived in the villages of Poland and Ukraine, a young Torah scholar was soon to be married. And he heard about an old couple who never had a fight in 60 years of marriage. And he was eager to learn their secret. So he walked for days to hear the husband's story. Finally met him, the old man says, "The day after we married, I went to my in-law's house with a donkey cart, and I loaded all of my wife's possessions into it. We set out for the new home. After a couple hours of walking, the donkey suddenly stopped. My wife walked around in front of the donkey, looked him in the eye, and said, 'That's one.' An hour later, the donkey took another unauthorized break. My wife said, 'That's two.' An hour after that, the donkey stopped again, and he wouldn't budge. My wife walked around in front of the donkey and said, 'That's three.' And then she pulled out a gun and shot the donkey dead. And I said to her, 'Don't you think that's a little excessive?' And she said, 'That's one.'"
Yeah, that's probably true, too. See, you have to have rules. Clear, concise rules, and you've got to set a good example. Oh, my gosh. Well, so what are you seeing on the film side of it? I know you had mentioned a little bit that, you know, they were a little bit stupid about whether or not like Guns N' Roses would be popular, or is that what they were thinking? It wouldn't be popular, or wouldn't get the view? You know,
this moron thought that non-Jews would not enjoy a great action thriller about a man of faith who stands up for his community when his community is attacked. Now, listen, the movie has to be entertaining, but we know it is. I mean, we tested it in front of audiences. People love it. Before we made this thriller, I took myself back to film school. My wife and I set up a projector and a screen in our living room, and we watched a thriller a day.
Oh, no kidding.
Like, we just studied the thriller genre. And we said, we were just determined to deliver a really exciting, action-packed movie. And we did that. And the fact that the man of the cloth is a rabbi, I mean, that makes it particular. I know a lot about this world, and I'm able to make him a very distinct character. But, of course, it's universal. I mean, you know, people of faith have more in common with each other very often, even if they're different faiths, than they have with people from maybe their own background, but, you know, who are militantly secularist. And there's a lot of people like that in the culture, sadly. But, you know, we can all identify with a man who's called to stand up for his community when the community's in danger.
Yeah, and there are all sorts of things like that. I mean, even if you go back to the series MASH, you know, you had Father Mulcahy. There he was in the middle of a war, you know. That's not a new idea, but I'm curious, when did you start this project? Was it before or after the October 7th?
It was before. We actually shot the movie at the end of 2022. Now, we knew, sadly, that a movie about Jews under attack who fight back would always be relevant.
That's true.
We have this large audience who's interested in what we share about Jewish wisdom, Jewish content. So we knew it was going to be a Jewish movie. And it was going to be a thriller. We weren't sure exactly what it was going to be. And then there was a terrible tragedy, a shooting in Poway, California, a young white nationalist who had been radicalized online, and who knows if he ever met a Jew, walked into a Chabad synagogue at the eighth day, the last day of Passover, killed a woman, Lori Gilbert Kay, shot the rabbi, shot his fingers off, and would have killed a lot more people if his gun had not miraculously jammed, and then the congregants chased him out. And I actually drove down the next day. I attended the funeral. I interviewed the rabbi. I watched him become a national figure. And doing something that the rabbi in Guns N' Moses does, and it's such a Jewish response. You know, when there's a tragedy, what we learn from our sages, from our history, is to make something meaningful come out of that tragedy. To call on people to do acts of kindness, acts of charity, acts of righteousness in the name of the departed, of the victim, of the dead one, and to make some good happen that wouldn't have happened otherwise. You know, it doesn't restore the dead person to their family, but at least it adds some kind of meaning to the tragedy. And the rabbi did that and was very inspired by that, and so that was part of the genesis of the project.
Wow. Well, your timing, obviously, was excellent. We have to take a really quick break. I'm actually not as far behind as I thought. I do hope people go to the website. I've got all this stuff linked. I've got your site linked and all the different projects. But when do we eat? We should talk about that a little bit when we come back, because the little subheader is sex, drugs, and matzo ball soup. I'm like, and the picture is hilarious. So anyway, I just thought that was pretty funny. So we found our friends at Six with 613 did one on Seder. So thought we'd bookend this part with Seder. And when we come back, maybe you can tell people what Seder is for those who do not know. Our guest today is Salvador. Goes by Sal, though. We should just keep calling him Sal. Sal Litvak. So he's now our pal, Sal. Nobody else's pal. We've got him today. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I clean the house and got rid of the hummus. Now the Seder's where I go. Me and my fam at the table eating matzah like the Hebrews long ago. So come over, we start Passover Seder by blessing the wine. And we wash in our hands. And we grab the parsley, dip it in the salt water, and break the middle matzah in half.
And now it's singing like, girl, you know I want matzah. Matzah was handmade by my father before me. Thanking God that we were freed, led out of slavery in Mitzrayim. Said, boys, now we'll drink four cups, spill for the plates, and go off with the magid. Thanking God that we were freed, thanking God that we were freed.
Questions again before the meal can begin, and eat the matzah after Father's eight. They had their leaves with flea, not that the eggies. Now we've got unleavened bread on the plate. Take a bite of the Mara so we remember the horrors of our lives as Egyptians flee. And for roasted to death, we put it on matzah and then eat Hillel sandwich, then Shulchan Aray.
And we're singing like, girl, you know I want matzah. Matzah was handmade by my papi for me. Thanking God that we were freed, let out of slavery, Mitzrayim.
Pretty tricky that you can have a song about all that. They just did such a good job. Okay, so Seder. Give people the elevator speech on Seder. How about that?
So Seder is a holiday meal that we enjoy once a year when we celebrate Passover. Truly, we commemorate God rescuing us from slavery in Egypt, right? With signs and wonders, with 10 miracles known as the plagues. God pulled our people out of slavery in Egypt. And then that becomes the setting for the oldest joke known to mankind, right? It's Exodus 14:11. So you can just hear a Jewish guy from Brooklyn saying, right? We've left Egypt. Everybody should be absolutely fine, right? God performed 10 miracles that we would leave Egypt. But now our backs are to the sea and the most powerful army in the world is coming after us, to kill us. And the guy turns to Moses and says, what'd you do to us? There weren't enough graves in Egypt. You had to bring us out here to die in the desert.
Yeah.
And then, of course, God parts the sea and we make it through. And that happens at Passover. So that's what we're commemorating. And we gather with our families and we tell the story of the redemption from slavery in Egypt, and we eat some special foods, including this, yeast-free bread known as matzah. It doesn't always taste so good, but it is the bread that commemorates that event in history.
I remember going to all of those events. We were really lucky as kids to live in a place where, I remember as a little kid, we, go to sleep over at somebody's house and we all had basements because it was in the East and, we all had our sleeping bags and we're all laying in the basement, a bunch of little, 9-10-year-old girls. And it's like, well, who do you guys think Jesus was? Oh, we think he's a great prophet. Really? So, we have like all these discussions about what it was like to be Jewish, what it was like to be Catholic, because nobody was, like, the idea of being Christian, that wasn't one of the choices. You're either Catholic or Jewish. You picked a team there. And everyone was on a team. Actually, there was nobody who said, I don't know, we don't go to either. That wasn't even a choice. But it was fascinating.
Yeah.
It was just fascinating, though, because none of us ever considered your side is wrong. Like, the way you do it is wrong. We were just interested. We were all interested, and so they did things that had borscht. I'm a big beet lover, and I was like, "Are you kidding me? You have a whole thing made out of just beets?" And we were having goulash at our house, right? went to the neighbors for all the exciting food. But
goulash is my favorite food. My grandmother made such an amazing goulash, authentic Hungarian goulash.
See. It's interesting. There's a whole cultural world out there that all these goofy people are completely missing, just out of hand. They're dismissing it out of hand. These guys are bad. The other guys are good. And a lot of that is not rooted in history, as we mentioned earlier. And I just was adding to the page for today, just in case I air this again, it's May 4th, 2025. But I added the show from October of 2024, former CIA officer Claire Lopez. And we did a whole 2 hours on the myth of Palestine and the two-state solution. And from a national security perspective, Claire just burns that one in, to the ground. It's fantastic. So if you still think Palestine is a state and Palestinians are a culture or whatever, yeah, that's why that joke is always so good. The meme, the big white room with nothing in it, and it's labeled the Museum of Palestinian History.
Yeah.
So
I mean, there are Arabs, you know, and it's a wonderful old culture, a lot of tradition. And there were Arabs and Jews, you know, living in the Holy Land. There weren't a lot. You know, it was really a desert. It had become a totally barren place. Mark Twain famously toured it in the 1800s. He was like, yeah, there's not many people here. This is just a wasteland. But there were always some Jews in Jerusalem. There were always people in Jerusalem throughout all time. And then there was a modern desire to have a Jewish state, particularly, I mean, it started in the late 1800s. Zionism was created, and eventually the British, you know, who won World War I, and so it went from the Ottoman Empire to a British mandate. And then there were Jews and Arabs, and they were fighting with each other because more people were coming. And what really happened was Jews decided we need to have a place of our own. We're going to just move to the Holy Land. Hopefully it'll become a state. And they started farming the land using modern methods that hadn't been used before. And they brought this wasteland back to life. And as the farms started succeeding and as the towns and cities started growing, and there was work. And then people, just like in California, people came because there was economic opportunity. And then a lot of non-Jews came also, and they, from that region, they were Arabs. But they came because the Jews were there, you know? And then you started growing these two populations side by side. But what's so interesting is that, you know, if you look, I don't know much. I'm not no kind of expert on Arab and Muslim culture. But I once participated in a fascinating panel called Sons of Abraham, where we've got three dads, a Muslim dad, a Jewish dad, and a Christian dad, sort of just comparing our experiences. The Muslim dad asked us to read this book about Muhammad, a biography compiled from the earliest sources by an Oxford professor who had converted to Islam. So, I mean, it could not be more fair and generous to Muhammad and, you know, really the history the way Muslims see it. And but what's interesting is that he grew up in a place where feuds and war of honor, you know, that never, like, there's a stain on your honor, it never goes away. So you can never let that go. Even if it takes two, three, four generations to get the vengeance, you can never let it go that there's a stain on your honor. Muhammad had to fight many times just to create his religion. And so, you know, war is a little bit of a part of the Quran and the way that it's developed. And this idea of conversion by the sword is real. But the main thing is there's this concept of Dar al-Islam, the House of Islam. And if a region of the world gets conquered and becomes part of the House of Islam, and then later it gets reconquered by the non-Muslims, so that's a stain on the honor. And they can't let it go. That's really what's happened. The fact that Israel was created really in the center of that Arab-Muslim world, you know, for some people, obviously not for all, but for some people in that world, it's an unbearable stain on the honor. And so it doesn't matter what land you offer and what concessions to peace you want to make. It's the existence of Israel that is the problem for those people. And so when the original offer was made, the two-state solution, that, you know, we're going to create two countries for you, this is Britain talking, so the two-state solution is called Israel and Jordan. And it was going to be 50-50. And they're like, no way, we will not accept that. So they made Jordan 80% and Israel 20% of that landmass. I'm like, okay, but the Jews only get one-fifth. Perfect. Now you can guys can both have your country. And they're like, okay, we'll take Jordan, but Israel can't exist. set that up ever since. And, you know, people should just do their own research and look at the history, but that's a pretty succinct and accurate summary.
Yeah. Yeah, Claire did a really nice job on that with the history and the political underpinnings of that and how that, quote, two-state solution has been tried a couple of times and obviously failed both because of exactly what you just outlined. There's no real interest in that. It sounds good, but there's no acceptance that the Jewish homeland can be a thing.
Right. Yeah. Americans just can't understand it because they're like, well, no, but everybody wants peace. So
right.
Obviously both sides want peace. So if there's a war going on, it must be because it's our fault.
Right.
No. We keep offering the country. We've offered it many times. And in that world, in that part of the world, what they respect is strength. So we have to be strong.
Yeah, you have to work with what you have, and I think that that part has been just impressive. That nobody's. Well, we also did another show with the same lady. We called it Operation Beeper, which was probably kind of mean-spirited, but it was about the pager, the operation that the Mossad did with the pagers.
And Operation Grim Beeper.
Grim Beeper, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that, Grim Beeper. These guys take security seriously. When I went to the consulate down there, I had the address. I was supposed to go there. Like, it wasn't like I was wandering along and just happened on in. I was going there on purpose. And I have to tell you, it was incredibly difficult to find. It was almost like the hidden door. And then once you got in, it was like, oh. And you weren't in once you were in. Then you had to go in some more. And then you went in some more. And it was almost like the Panama Canal, but in a building. So you went to the locks, you know, the door locked behind you and the door in front of you wasn't open yet. And we were in the middle. And it was, I have to say, it wasn't scary at all. It was super impressive. And I thought, wow, this is like the safest meeting I've ever been to in my entire life.
and then, of course, it wasn't necessary.
Well, and then Charles Small and I went out, Dr. Small and I went out the doors. We were chatting about his project with ISGAP. And, you know, then we were accosted by drug addicts and homeless people. And it was like, can we go back in the building? Like, we had to ride on BART. Terrifying. But it isn't something, you know, people think there's no pressure. But I think even in L.A., you obviously said you're encouraging people in your community to learn to defend themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's unfortunate that has to be done, but you'd be kind of a dummy if you didn't. I mean, honestly. So, tell us something funny, Sal. Let's end on something funny because I got Bohemian Hanukkah queued up here.
For 6:13.
Yes.
Okay, here's one your audience might like. This is joke number 63 from Let My People Laugh, greatest year jokes of all time, bestseller on Amazon. So a fleeing Taliban terrorist, desperate for water, is trudging through the desert when he sees something in the distance. Praying that it isn't a mirage, he hurries toward the object only to find a little old Jew selling ties from a rack. And the terrorist blurts, "Give me water." "Sorry, no water. Would you like to buy a tie? They're only $5. "Infidel, I don't need a Western adornment. I spit on your ties. I need water." "Sorry, no water, just ties, but they're pure silk and only $5. "A curse on your ties. I'd twist one around your neck and choke you, but I need strength to find water." "No. So you don't want to buy a tie from me, and you hate me, and you call me infidel, and you threaten my life. But I fear only God. So I will tell you that if you go west over that hill for about 2 miles, you'll find a restaurant. They serve fine food and all the ice-cold water you can drink. Go in peace." Grumbling, another cursed and desperate terrorist staggers west over the hill. Hours later, he crawls back nearly dead, and he gasps, "They wouldn't let me in without a tie."
On that note, we have to unfortunately say goodbye to our guest. Oh, Sal, it's been terrific. Thank you so much. We hope your movie is a huge success.
Thank you.
And I hope people go and check all this out. Guns N' Moses coming out this summer. Our guest has been Sal Litvak. We'll be right back.
Thank you so much.
With the terrorist therapist. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Escape from great tyranny.